It right there. That's Hot and Cold Saturday Morning. You knew that. That's how we start the show, with some good music. And it's just downhill from there. Morning, I'm Tom. It's raining out. We need the rain. That's good. It's a good thing. And it's autumn, but unfortunately, the rain might make the leaves fall faster. I'm reveling and looking at all the colors. And October is the month. I'm telling you, if you have to pick a perfect month for the state of Maine, October, maybe September 2nd would be the second choice. October, though, perfect month. Temperature's just right. You're not going to break a sweat easily. You can work hard, get stuff done. What's he talking about? I don't know. Anyway, I love October. Great month. And then we got Halloween at the end. It just gets better and better. And if you haven't, this is a guilty pleasure of mine. I go into Home Depot, or I go into Lowe's. Right now, they have all the Halloween stuff up. They have all these little buttons on the floor that if you tap the button, the Halloween, they're all animated things. They get to talk to you and try to scare you. I'm not scared, but it's great fun. Anytime I go in there, I didn't do it this morning because I was in a rush, but most times I go in there, especially if I have somebody with me, let's go look at all the things that we can make try to scare us. So that's good. Speaking of scaring us, forget about the fake stuff at Home Depot and Lowe's and pushing buttons and stuff. I'm not sure how to read this or understand it, other than I find it unnerving. Anytime they say that, and this was in the news this morning for my crack research team here at the radio station. Anytime they say, oh, you know, we found a frozen animal, you know, like a frozen, I don't know, muscadon? Frozen elephant from way back when. Or you go into a pyramid, or somewhere where there's dead things. I'm always concerned, maybe just me, about what you're breathing when you go into places like that. And what's the repercussions? You know, if they, in Europe in particular, there's a lot of catacombs with people who died from the plague. And all those viruses are all gone bye-bye. I'm sorry. I think, you know, if you want to see macabre, watch a movie. You don't need to go into a catacomb with a bunch of dead stuff. But having said all that, all these paranoid things, thoughts I have about bugs, scientists have uncovered viable, let's underline that, alive, living, or things that will come back to life. 2 billion-year-old microbes they have found in some mineral deposits somewhere. I don't even want to know where. I don't care. 2 billion-year-old. Now, what's to say that that 2 billion-year-old microbe ain't going to do something bad? I just hope, because I ain't there, you're not there, they at least got the lice already, just in case. We've been down this road before. We don't want to go down it again. But it's fascinating to think the viability of 2 billion-year-old microbes. But I don't want to. No, keeping them away from me. I don't need to meet these microbes. So, oh my, it's been a frustrating week in some ways and good in other ways. Frustrating in that my car, the car I drive every day, the one that's got the thing on the side, says the Prius on it, just crossed over to 473,000 miles this morning. So I've got, what, 27,000 miles, and I get to 500K. And I want to get it to 500,000 miles. And I have done nothing extraordinary to this automobile. We changed, I got the oil changed the other day. And just remembering to do that is kind of extraordinary. But it doesn't burn oil. It doesn't consume anything, more than it should. And by that, I mean I don't even have to add oil in between changes. And sometimes the changes, I forget. But I did have to replace the rockers. And aftermarket rocker panels are much heavier than the original. And while it was in for an oil change, I told the guys, take it, look it over, see what you think. And they sent me pictures of underneath. I knew it needs to be re-undercoated. But the inner rockers, there's holes on both sides of the inner rockers. Now, it's not unexpected. Underneath, I have a 2007. The 2007, they have a plastic shield on both sides that tends to catch dirt. It's there for aerodynamics, for better efficiency. It also catches dirt. And that dirt causes this rust that it happens around the rockers. And I got to fix it. My mechanic said, well, maybe it's time. No. You know, it's like, I ain't putting the dog to sleep yet. We're that close. And it is repairable. I finally got to look at it. It was a couple of days ago I got word. But I finally got to look at it yesterday, and it is repairable. What I've got to do is I'm going to remove those stupid plastic panels and toss them and undercoat where the plastic panels covered everything. First, we'll do conversion coating to convert any rust to something more stable. Then we'll attack the holes, which are not terrible, but there's holes there. It's only money, right? We got to get to 500,000 miles. I mean, come on, Tom. Speaking of which, we got to take a break. We got to at least pay that bill. And it is 8:15, so we'll be right back.
Well, I ain't 16, not a beauty queen, and my eyes are bagging and my skin is sagging, and if that's the reason that you don't love me, then maybe that's not love. Well, I ain't 20 either, and I don't care neither, and my hair is gray, and I like it that way, and if that's the reason that you don't love me, then maybe that's not love. If you don't think I rock, well, we ain't gonna roll. If you don't think I hung, well, my heart just turned to cold. If you want a younger model, I wish you well, sweet pea. Cause if you can't see what it is you have, then you ain't having me. I got cellulite and aching feet, and my thoughts gonna jiggle when I giggle or wiggle.
All right, we're back. It's 8:18. It is hot and cold Saturday morning. It's good to be back. And, well, let's see. Busy week. And my friend Mark finished scratching the dirt out in back of our property. And considering what he started with, it's all flat. All the big rocks are gone. They're buried. I'm thinking it's just big enough either, I don't know, if it might be big enough for football, might be big enough for soccer, be a gigantic ice skating rink, and it's flat, and it looks good, and he amazingly got, some parts of Maine, especially in western Maine, you got that sandy soil, and you look at that, and like, what a dream this is to build on, especially for us in eastern Maine, where we have swale holes and clay and big rocks. Well, we had big rocks. I mean, we had huge rocks, and most of those are gone. And he did it with his heavy equipment. And I actually drove my Prius with the holes. holes were there before. Around on the area that he did. I mean, it's that relatively flat and clear of rocks. So it was it's quite something. I have no idea what I'm going to do with 2-3 acres of cleared land now, but I guess we'll grow some lawn or lawn weeds or something and just mow it for the time being. It's kind of amazing to see that big area done, and we got one other project in the hopper still before the weather turns, and at my house we went and looked at this Thursday. At my house, I have a rock wall. My house is on the side of a hill. And there's a rock wall made of granite slabs. And I really didn't look at them that much, except they're leaning the wrong way. And they will kill somebody if they're not repaired. I mean, they're overhanging. Gravity is just making everything slide downhill. So it really needs to be repaired. And I think the slabs are 6 inches thick, maybe, and maybe 2 feet wide. And so we went up and looked at it and figured out the method of attack. And I really, honest to God, after 3 years of living there, just was looking at them more closely as we were discussing. And some of these slabs are like 10 feet long, maybe longer. And so, you know, they're pushing a ton, probably. Anyway, we're going to do that. We're going to take, I'm not sure how much we have to take apart, but we'll be doing some serious digging and getting that cleaned up. And there's actually been some that have already fallen off. So we're going to get those picked up. Excuse me. They interfere with, I inevitably try to drive over them if I'm not paying attention, especially if I'm backing in. So we'll get those put back on the wall and get the wall so it won't fall down and kill somebody, and that'll be good. Then almost all my projects at the house are done. I just have, as the weather turns, I want to go over some knots that are coming through in white paint, you know, some kills and stuff. But that's it. Basement floors painted. Now, one little area where one of my kids is storing stuff, I have to move it all and paint that, and I'll be done. One of the interesting things is now that the basement floor is basically painted and clean, I'm finding crickets. They were there before, but now I can see them better, and so I'm trying to make sure that we have all the – now that maybe they're secreted in somewhere. We'll find them. Their days are numbered, but I found them on the floor alive, and and I've sent them to the right place for crickets that shouldn't be in my basement. And I'm going to start, as I said, for many weeks now. I actually started putting things back where they belong and cleaning stuff up. And non-important banjo parts go away, and important banjo parts get sorted, and it's going to be a long banjo winter is what it's going to be. So, in the process of doing all that, I had, I had mentioned we had changed out the boiler, the heating system, and I wanted to set up the boiler to operate as a cold start. It could operate where you just turn it on, and it maintains a given temperature, but I'd rather run it as a cold start boiler, which means I have to be able to turn it off and on, but it has a, the burner has a purge cycle. So when it is calling for heat, the fan comes on, induces a draft to go up the chimney or out the vent, because this can be direct vented. It's not. It's tied to a chimney. And then the burner comes on, heats up the water, burner shuts off, and then it goes through a post-purge cycle, if you will, where it just exhausts any remaining combustion byproducts out of the unit so they don't kind of drift back into the house. Well, my first thought was, well, I'll just interrupt the power to the unit at 110 volt, you know, where it's a plug-in thing. And last weekend I hooked that up to some of the safety devices you need to have around boilers. So I got the outlet in, plugged it in, you know. I said, well, wait a minute. If I just turn off the 110 volts, I could interrupt the burn cycle. I could interrupt the purge cycle. And we could have some smell in the house. So then I took my limited electrical engineering background. The career that I was asked, the college where I studied electrical engineering asked me to leave. So, long story. But I have enough background that I got into the controls a little bit. I found it's quite simple. I did a little test. It worked. So I can shut the unit off and maintain the purge cycle. So I got that all wired up. All the wiring's hooked up. The thermostat's on. My wife can turn up the heat if she needs to during the day. I can turn the heat up or down as I need to in the evening when I'm home. And it's like a real heating system. So that was kind of nice to get that out of the way. The crickets like it too, I think. Oh, so the biggest project, I guess, I mean, not that these were small projects, but biggest project of the week has been my daughter Maria had she got her house a while ago. We put in a single unit washer dryer, had a space in the bathroom for a washer dryer, took up a lot of room. They were side by side, and it was a very tight fit, very claustrophobic. So we decided to get I guess I'd call it a stacked unit, a washer with a built-in dryer up above it. You know, you see them, it's a one unit thing. It's tall. The dryer gave up its ghost a little while ago, and so she's using a drying rack. And recently the washer acted up, and our thought was, well, let's replace both. And we discussed it. And then I thought, well, wait a minute, why don't we just get a repair person in just to make sure? I mean, the thing is 15 years old, so it doesn't owe anybody anything. Let's just see. Maybe it just needs a belt. Maybe you can fix the dryer while he's there. Well, he came this week and said, no, the transmission's gone. It's not worth fixing. So we got to get this thing out. Now, this is a very tight fit. And getting into the way the room is laid out. And I remember when it went in, it was two big guys and me just in the way. Getting it into the place and getting it out was going to be the same kind of thing. And I'm kind of chewing on that. We might have to take out the bathroom fixtures to be able to get this thing out. Not looking forward to that. So I got thinking about it. I said, well, why don't we take it apart? And I suggested that to Maria. She said, this is my daughter. I like taking things apart. Score. There you go. So after work yesterday, I gave her, I brought cordless impact driver, Phillips head, quarter inch, 5/16 hex head. And I had to go, she had to drop me to pick up a car. She headed home and I went to her house and, you know, maybe she had a 15-minute head start on me. And she had some panels off already, and we attacked the dryer. We had the dryer basically disassembled in 10, 15 minutes. And I said, and I left her. She was looking forward to, I mean, it's a great way to vent your frustrations, just to take something apart. You don't have to think about having to put it back together. This is fun. So you cut wires, you can cut belts, you can just tear into the thing. And I said, send me pictures. I got to see the pictures. So she's down to the washer, the whole dryer that sits on top of the unit, which is, you know, I don't know, 3 feet, 3.5 feet high, is gone. It's out in the driveway in pieces. And I'll probably go up there today. She may be working on it right now. We'll get the whole thing out. And it's in easy to handle pieces. And it makes you wonder about what you buy when you buy appliances. In terms of what the thing is. But we got to take a break. It's almost 8:30. And we come back, we'll do more stuff. Phone number's 1-800-966-1039. Text line 601-207-4478. It is hot and cold. It is Saturday morning, and we'll be back in a bit.
Well, I've heard it shouted, and I've heard it preached. Such a great state of evolution man has reached. Oh, I believe that it's so. Appendix helped to answer the question of many a caveman's indigestion. I believe that it's so. The bushman walking in the tall, tall grass, he really needed his pancreas. Whoa. Don't you know what he went through when his pancreas days was through? Evolution.
É caco de vidro, é a vida, é o sol. É a noite, é a morte, é o laço, o anzol. É peroba do campo,
rio na madeira.
Cai da candeia,
é uma tinta pereira.
É madeira de vento,
e o tombo da ribanceira.
É um mistério profundo,
eu quero não quero.
É o vento ventando, o fim da ladeira. É a viga, é o vão, festa da cumieira.
E a chuva chovendo é confessa ribeira das águas de março e o fim de canseira.
All right, we're back. 8:34 here, hot and cold. Feel my blood pressure just anytime I play bossa nova music. I feel myself kind of calming down. Mr. Joe Beam, you did good. Let's see. We got a text message at 601-207-4478. What did I just do? I just hit the wrong button. Let's get rid of that there. Let's go there. There we go. Read a report stated if you want to install a heat pump in your manufactured home and get the rebates, you have to remove your existing heating system. Thoughts? I think it sucks. How's that for being blunt? I think it's stupid. Right now, just looking at the numbers this morning for the state of Maine, heat pumps are par with oil. I like the idea of having the heat pump. I like the idea of the AC, which we need more than we have in the past. But I also, as a homeowner, a person who owns a house, I don't want you telling me what I could do for heating. And okay, so you don't get the rebate if you do. I guess qualifying for the rebate, you do that. But I want a wood stove, or I want backup. I want belt and suspenders. I want a backup system in place. Maybe not a wood stove. Maybe I want oil. I mean, God forbid, the primary system breaks down. What's your backup? What do you got? Do you have anything? And some people don't. And I think it's prudent to, especially with the power situation, it doesn't seem like it's better to me. Maybe it's just that we have more serious storms. But I want that backup. In my case, I think if I have a house, I want a wood stove. I may never use it, but it's there if I need it. And it doesn't require electricity. You can get gas stoves that don't require electricity. Oil, you're going to need electricity. But, who knows what any energy cost is going to do. In theory, electrical costs could conceivably come down in time. They have slid back a little bit, so that's good. But oil prices are quite low right now. I don't want to take, if you're in a manufactured home and you have that Miller gun furnace, not that I'm a big fan of Miller gun furnaces, it's there. I own it. Why do I have to take it out? I'll disconnect it if you want. I'll disconnect the power to it, but I want to leave it there. Just in case, you never know. If the heat pump goes down, we can reconnect it and be off and running. My two cents. There you go. Let's see. We used to live in California near some meth freaks, and they love to tear apart washers and dryers in the driveway, just like you. Difference is it would never be reassembled. Well, these aren't going to be reassembled either. And I do put things back together. If I tear things, I'm getting good at putting things back together. When I was a kid, they'd come apart, and I didn't know what I was doing, so a lot of times things didn't go back together. And these are – my daughter's now got a pile of washer-dryer parts in her driveway, but I'll be up there today with the truck to pick everything up, and we'll finish getting the last of it out because we need to get a new thing in there, so we need to clear the space. And this time it'll be stackable. So, with stackable appliances, at least if you can, they come out in two pieces instead of one. The height was the challenge. I mean, you got the two combined. Granted, they weren't as heavy duty as maybe individual components would be, but there's still a lot of weight there, and it's tall, and it was challenging. I still remember. I mean, it was 15, 18 years ago. I don't remember. It was a while ago we put it in. It was I don't want to use the exact word, but it was a challenge. I'll leave it that way. Let's go to the phones where we could have a challenge. Good morning. You're on the Voice of Maine.
Morning, Tom.
Hi.
We'll follow up on the heat pump for trailer story. The deal is, if you get the efficiency and the rebate, they're going to put the heat pump in the same space where the Miller furnace is now, and they're going to hook it up to the existing duct system. Well,
okay.
A great man once said, this sucks. Now, my reason I think it sucks is those ducts run underneath the trailer. So you're taking your warm air and putting it in ductwork that's probably seeing cold temperatures, if not outright outdoor temperatures.
Yeah. Yeah, I agree. So, here's the deal. I wonder if one was putting a mini split. Now, the dilemma with a manufactured home is the length. So a mini split isn't necessarily going to heat the whole place. But you're absolutely right. If you're tying into the ducts, you do have to pull out the Miller gun. Not an elegant solution in my book. If we're trying to work for energy efficiency here, and it's a challenge with a manufactured home in this of this format, maybe 14 feet wide, 60, 70 feet long, some of them are. I wonder if a multi-outlet mini split would allow you to do that. I eliminate the ducting and have a lot less heat loss. For what it's worth. So that technically isn't a mini split. It's a heat a ducted heat pump would be the term. Well, let's see. Ovens don't require electricity. Ovens that don't require electricity are hard to find unless you go to General Appliance. Thank you for mentioning that, because I do want to mention General Appliance. I almost forgot. I usually remember the end of the hour. Our friends at General Appliance are on Center Street, open 9 to 4 Monday through Friday. The number is 989-4341. They do sell Empire heaters, which do not require electricity, and they also have stoves with standing pilots, or maybe they have a non-electric igniter as well. So that's worth checking in with them, because they deal with a lot of folks who are off the grid. And there's people who, and you don't need to be off the grid to put one of these appliances in, and it gives you then the convenience. But a lot of gas stoves will. I would think you might be able to. I'm not going to make the comment. You may be able to light them without power, with a match. I'm not sure about how the plumbing is. I know that used to be possible. I'm not sure it is on every one. So that's a question to be asked. Let's see. Tom, manufactured home, relies on the heat ducts under the floor to keep the water lines from freezing. Okay. It's still not efficient. You're heating a space that's not insulated properly, and I would rather deal with the water lines as a separate thing. I love the concept of manufactured housing. There's so much in its favor. They're affordable. They're fairly decent. If I look at new manufactured housing, I could see myself being in there and kind of enjoying the space. Unfortunately, they are made in a way that just looks like a manufactured home. Call it a mobile home to show my age. And that's unfortunate, because the plumbing should be, we shouldn't be losing energy to keep the pipes from freezing. I understand we don't want pipes freezing, but there's better ways to do it than this. And having skirting to try to hold enough heat, even if it's insulated, to keep the pipes from freezing is not, in 2024, is not an appropriate solution. I'll leave it at that. It's not elegant, and it should be. It's not rocket science. And we're not talking about spending gobs of money to do this right. And anytime I see somebody who is even attempting to do something in the realm of manufactured housing that doesn't look like a 14 by 60 or 70 foot long, whatever, I applaud them. Unfortunately, there's not much you can do if you want to get the square footage in today's marketplace. I'll predict that's going to change. The tiny house thing, you know what I find fascinating, and you must too, is cabins. Everybody, you know, there's all these companies making cabins, and people are taking these things and adapting them into living space. And it, you know, some of them are not built to code. Some of them, most of them are too close to the ground. They're going to experience moisture failure over time. But the basic concept is interesting. Now, they're not necessarily cost-effective to convert to living space, because they, you know, we go back to this thing. When I look at housing, if I'm building something, I want to look at the cost per square foot. That gives you a relative, it isn't necessarily apples and apples, but maybe it's maybe it's peaches and nectarines. It's closer, okay? And you can at least start to get a sense of relative cost. And just as an example, you look at a shed, maybe a small shed, 10 feet by 12 feet, 120 square foot footprint. And then you could do this at night. You get a pad of paper and a pencil and a calculator and get online and just go to Home Depot. And I'm not endorsing you buy lumber at Home Depot, but they're online, their prices are advertised, and figure out the material. If you have any understanding of construction, figure out the material cost. And then say, you know, what's my time and energy worth? What can I build? Can I build this shed for X number of dollars? And is it worth my time? Is it worth, we call it sweat equity for a reason. You put a little bit of sweat equity in, and you're not paying for transport to bring the thing to you. You're not paying any middle person. There's always a middleman or two in the shed industry. And if you eliminate some of those steps, it's not that hard to do. Or even if you just hire a crew to build it for you, a carpenter, you don't have to build it. You're still ahead of the game because that person gets paid anyhow to build it. And you've eliminated several steps of markup along the way. And to me, that's kind of cool. And obviously, you need to know a little bit about construction if you're going to try to do something like that. But there's a lot of ways to do this to bring that cost down. Let's see. Tom Manufactured Home has a belly pan insulation, about 6-inch insulation. You really aren't losing much energy. Well, you are. 6 inches it's belly pan insulation. It's R19 fiberglass. If you look at energy codes are catching up with reality in our climate. R19 is inadequate. It's for a floor. I mean that R19 is the bare minimum you're supposed to have for floor insulation. Somehow they get around that. It's better than nothing, but it's not perfect. So I'll leave it at that. Stop. I'll just backtrack a little bit here. I throw more numbers around because that's what I do. If we're going to build on a slab, okay, the slab sits right on the earth. And with no insulation, you build a concrete slab. It's just simple, 6 inches thick. It's sitting on the earth. We're not going to do frost walls even. It's just a 6-inch thick slab. It shouldn't be. It should be thickened at the edges, but let's not do that. Put that slab on the ground and build a garage over it. Okay, it's not living space even. I had this question put to me years ago when people were starting to build houses on what you would call a floating slab or an Alaskan slab, a slab with thickened edges, a frost-protected slab. Six-inch slab on the earth, building over it. At that point, it depends on soils, but generalization, big brush, I'm painting with broad generalizations here. That building over the slab will probably keep the ground underneath from freezing. So the earth underneath that slab might be 40 degrees. Now, if you want to live in there, and let's say you want to build that as a house today, your code person is going to say 2 inches of foam, R10, underneath the slab. Okay. So we do that. But it's already 40 degrees underneath the slab. We put insulation on top, it's probably going to be even a little bit warmer. But the temperature differential between where you are standing on top of the slab and underneath, 70 degrees in the room, that's what you're living with, right? 40 degrees underneath, 30-degree temperature difference. And that quantifies the amount of heat loss, but you've got R10 underneath, so you're not losing a lot of energy. The building is up in the air now, 2 feet because it's got a crawl space, if you will. It's got skirting around the trailer. Got that R19. Now, forget about heat dissipating down for the moment. It's better insulated, in theory at least. But the air that's coming in around the skirting, it's coming in underneath, is whatever temperature is outside. And it ain't always 40 degrees. We're living in Maine. Sometimes it's 10 below zero. That's the design temperature, 10 below zero. Big difference in terms of heat loss. And big difference in terms of the type of insulation. Air can move, conceivably, through fluffy insulation. It's not going to go underground and come up through concrete and 10 inches of foam. And in fact, if you were building a house on a slab and it had radiant heat in it, where the slab would now be 100 degrees instead of 70 degrees, Coda requires 3 inches of foam and perimeter insulation. Okay? So big differences there. So it's not elegant. It's not perfect. It is what it is. If you know, a mobile home is an affordable place, you're going to be spending money to keep that space underneath from freezing, from the pipes bursting, and that's a good thing. You've got to pay that price. That's a trade-off we have to make to be able to buy a less expensive home. There's no reason it has to be that way. There's other ways to do this, I think, that would make a lot more sense. Excuse me. And it's I expect we'll see this as time goes on. The other aspect of this is codes for manufactured homes are different than the stick-built home that you're building. And even then, sometimes those stick-built codes aren't applicable. But if I was a developer building a house, all those codes are set in stone for good reason. We want these houses to be affordable and sustainable, that they will last a while, won't fall apart. Unfortunately, I think if we're doing this with cabins, you just drop in the yard and it's on 4x4 pressure treated. There's going to be a spate of failures over time. If you elevate it and build a crawl space underneath that you insulate, and that changes the equation to some degree. If you're on a concrete slab, and you've got one of these cabins and you set it on a frost wall that's built out of lumber, preferably pressure treated lumber, and it's insulated with foam in particular, we've got a lot better situation. Or if it's a mobile home and it's set on a true, I'll call it foundation, a wooden frost wall that could be properly insulated, that's way better. I'm not sure that happens a lot with manufactured housing even today. And maybe it should be a code issue. It does add to the cost, but it saves energy costs. It saves you from having any potential failures. And especially, again, if the ducting is underneath that R19, in addition to insulated perimeter walls that are really tight, not just vinyl siding that's got some foam behind it, but something that's truly tight. That's the way to go. So that's my opinion. I'll stick to it. What else? My back is killing me today. I was cleaning a car all day yesterday. Got a car, got it ready. Mechanics were all done with it. I go to start cleaning it, and it needed some cleaning. So I get into the, and I'm cleaning it, and I'm vacuuming, and I'm wiping stuff down, and I get to the back, and the hatch is a Prius. In the hatch, you lift up there's a tool tray, and then there's a spare tire underneath. So I remove that, I take the stuff out, and I look to my right, a passenger side, where the 12-volt battery is. There's some massively big wire, the wire the size of my finger. And I'm looking at this, and I say, oh, that's for a subwoofer. And I look, and the subwoofer wiring is connected to the battery, and there's two bare-ended wires right next to each other in the battery tray, in the adjacent to the metal body of the car. And they're live. They're bare. Somehow, this car has not caught on fire, or at least blown a fuse. It had a fuse in it because subwoofers have these big fuses because you have to make the boom, boom, boom noise. So I freak out. I go get tools right away. I disconnect it. So I get that out of there. And then I look down, and I had to take the battery out of the car. Look down where the battery was, and there's all these little short pencils that golfers use, to keep score. It's full of golfer pencils and tees. Take those out, vacuum it out. Then I go where the tire is, take the tire out, and there is compost. And I look more closely. It is composted golfer pencils. They have turned to be one with the earth. And it was interesting. It's clean now, but it was, what? The pencil was still there. The lead was there. And I had compost. If this isn't already compost, what you're listening to. We'll be back in a bit.
And I damn near didn't come back again. I didn't go very fast on a steam-powered aeroplane. Oh, the wheel went around and up and down and inside and then back again. Sitting in a 747 just watching them clouds roll by. Can't tell if it's sunshine or if it's rain. I'd rather be sitting in a deck chair high up over Kansas City on a genuine, old-fashioned, authentic steam-powered aeroplane.
All right, we're back. It's 9:06, hot and cold Saturday morning. Good morning again. I'm Tom. Phone number's 1-800-966-1039. Text line 601-207-4478. I expect we might hear from the future Governor Pete. I don't know. We'll see if he's busy or not with customers. John Hartford in the background there. This album, this called Steam Powered Aeroplane, came out in 1971. So what is that? 53 years ago? Oh, my goodness. I remember the day this landed at the radio station. I was the music director. And the acid test I had, because, we would get albums, records, and you have to go through them. As a music director, I prepared what they call a playlist, which would be the cuts that we would recommend you play. Obviously, Rolling Stones come, we would pick out a cut, but, the whole album would get played. But I worked out an acid test because you have to listen to all these albums. I mean, that'd take hours. So we would have a lot of records coming in. So my test was, it's not an exact science, and I won't say it was perfect or maybe even good, but it worked for me. I would put the record on the turntable. I would listen to maybe the first half minute, if I went that long, and then I'd listen to something in the middle, then I'd go to the end, and I would do that with every cut. And inevitably, you get good albums, you get bad albums that weren't as desirable. But I had a pretty good track record for picking stuff. But here's the thing. A really great album for me was Every Cut I Want to Listen To. Or let's say 80%, if not the whole album. And this album came in. First of all, my head just about exploded when I heard that song. That was the first song on the album. And I'm like, oh, my God. And I'm a John Hartford fan, so I didn't know what to expect. This is completely different from what he had played before. The album, and by the way, the album was not successful in radio. It didn't get a lot of airplay, but it had legs. And somehow I knew it because it was John Hartford. I knew it was going to be good, but it was way better than anything I could have anticipated. Every cut on that album was playable, and you will hear them on this program, just about every cut. There's a couple, some I won't play there, but most everyone I would play, and did, and have, and shall. Let's see. Text line 601-207-4478. Tom, I haven't had a question. No, it's a long one. I have a Bangor box, 1902. This insulation up there has finished floor with cellulose blown over it. Ooh, okay. I need to reclaim the floor space for storage and get a better insulation result. My first question is, I'd like to remove that blown cellulose, mitigate it. I'm wondering what would be the best way to do it. It looks like an industrial rental vacuum's kind of dried up. Like I used to use for blown insulation. Do you think a simple corded electric leaf vacuum could be used? Yeah, into contractor bags. That, I think that would work. I don't think you're going to get into too much mischief. It's cheap enough and easy enough to try. Second question, once removed, would craft face insulation board like we used to sell go underneath the roof in the attic? I need it to be foil faced? Well, a couple of thoughts. Let me just go back over here. You need to reclaim floor space. So you're leaving the floor in place. So you do obviously need to take up the insulation. If you put, he's talking about craft face board. Okay. You could, a couple of ways to approach this. The simple way is to cut and fit foam, and it could be foil face, it could be craft face, in the rafter bays, and then maybe go over that with something like 1 inch and seal the joints there. Some people would make the case, and this would be especially for an asphalt roof, to leave an airspace, and that's a little bit easier to do with rigid foam insulation. You could have some spacers that maintained about an inch gap, and then push the foam up against it. You've got an airspace, so the roof can stay. If there was any moisture penetrated through, it could ventilate and dry out. Also, that airspace would protect the shingles from prematurely failing. So that would work. You'd want to have at least about an R40 if you could accomplish that. Facer, the beauty of foil face, you can use, if you could get craft face, there's no advantage one over the other. Foil face, I guess the advantage foil face gives you is it bounces light around, so it's a little bit easier if you have like one light bulb hanging from the ceiling that you'd be able to see better as opposed to using paper face. But there's no real insulation advantage for one over the other. Chances are, in Bangor, unless you find some on Craigslist or Facebook Marketplace, you're probably going to be dealing with foil face anyway. You may find paper if you're shopping around. There was a local vendor in Thorndike, and he moved to, he was Amish, he moved to Hiram. And Hiram is about as physically far away as you can get from our area in the Bangor area without leaving the state. And I'm not sure it's worth the trip for that much. But there may be some, I every so often I look, and there are people who have some kicking around as opposed to just going to a lumber yard and getting it where you are going to pay. Unfortunately, insulation along with every other building material has not gotten cheaper. I've been watching a lot. On cable, on Amazon Prime, they run a lot of British home improvement shows. And one series I've been watching is post pandemic. And they, as well as we, were experiencing exactly the same thing as it relates to building materials. After the pandemic, all the prices went up. The availability of product was minimal because the demand was so high from a year or two of not having stuff happening. And they saw their budgets fly out the window. So it's I think that's moderated slightly. I was doing my house I'm in now, post-pandemic, and I want to tell you, especially for plywood and stuff, that was scary. OSB was, OSB, I look at it as kind of a marker of what's going on in the industry. You know, is it $7 a sheet or is it $24? At the time, I think it was $24 a sheet for 7/16 OSB. And I needed some for whatever. I didn't even remember what I was doing at the time. But you just have to grit your teeth and do it. And if you want to get the project done, fortunately, as I say, that has changed. So that's a help. Phone number again, 1-800-966-1039. Text line is 601-207-4478. So the golf cart thing, golf tee thing, golfer thing. The person was apparently a rabid golfer. And how all these little pencils got into the spear wheel well, which is pretty well secreted underneath everything, is amazing. And a little bit of water got in there, and it didn't rot out the car either. It was kind of amazing. That whole space where the spare tire went was fine. When I do find a car like that has obviously some moisture it gets in from time to time, I will put a small weep hole in just so it can drain. Because it can wreak havoc otherwise. This one was intact. I have a suspicion the compost helped. It was black. I mean, it literally looked like what you would want to see in a compost heap. So that was good, I guess. It saved everything. Speaking of saving things, we got to take some bills out, take care of some bills, and do some stuff here. So we'll do that. We'll be back in just a minute. It is hot and cold. Saturday morning. A hot, cold Saturday morning. Phone number is 1-800-966-1039. Text 601-207-4478. Tony Trischka in the background. Cut Cold Greenwood. That's not him on the fiddle. That's him on the banjo. And I should mention this just because it has been something I've been kind of dwelling on for a while. Tony has a instrument being made with his name on it by Deering Banjos Company in California. And it's a really nice instrument. And he plays it, live and stuff. I think when he recorded this, he was playing a 1930 instrument that was originally a tenor banjo, and they put a proper neck on it, and he played it for a while and recorded with it for, I think, 30 years. Well, the neck broke at some point. It said Gibson. It was a fake Gibson banjo neck. And he puts on a Japanese banjo neck, looked the same, made by a company called Tokai. And that banjo is for sale today. If you want that banjo with the Tokai neck on it, not one that looks like a Gibson neck, you can go to Elderly Instruments in Michigan and you can buy it for $82,000. $82,999 or something like that. Now, somebody actually played it, says, sounds really good. It almost plays itself. Man, it's got to for that kind of money. Anyway, if I play this song, this could mean only one thing. Other than the season. It's the moment. It's the moment. The moment has arrived when the man who could be governor of the state of Maine, with your help, comes on to the Hot and Cold Radio Show every Saturday morning. That's Pete. Good morning, Pete. Pete, you there?
I tell you, I'm here. Can you hear me?
Yeah, go ahead.
Yeah. The first thing I'm going to do, after I get elected, in less than a month, is I'm going to put that fire out.
Well, there you go. That's a great...
The one in Orange. That's number one with a bullet. We're putting that out.
Yeah, okay. Well, what are you getting elected to in a month that you're going to put the fire out?
What do you got?
The what?
I'll take it. What do you got? I'll take it.
Oh, what do we got? I don't know. Well, I'll have to
just
look at the ballot.
I'll take it. You ever see the show Boardwalk Empire?
No,
on that
I never
show,
have.
Nucky Thompson was the treasurer of Atlantic City.
Okay.
But he used that position to be a boss of everything. So just get me in somewhere, and I'll take it from there.
Okay. We'll work on that. So,
it's going to work out best for everybody because I'm a mover and a shaker. I'm gonna stir things up. I'm going to get rid of all the fluff. We're going to have health care. We're going to have lower taxes. The fire is going to be out.
Okay.
So it's going to be just fine.
Well, there you go. What more would we need than that? I don't think we need to know anything else. Right there.
No, you don't. Don't ask any questions about anything else I'm going to do.
That sounds like I'm not going to.
Take your low taxes and your cheap health care and just, don't all worry right. about me. I'll take care of the all rest. Right.
You studied politics, I can tell. Oh, man. Did you see the compost yesterday in the back of that red car?
No, I didn't, but please tell us more about the compost.
I've already told the story.
It's not one that we're selling. Don't tell that story. I got to sell that friggin' thing in a couple of weeks.
It's clean as a whip. It looks really – I'm going to compliment myself. I cleaned up really well. I cleaned all that compost out, and, it looked – better than it ever should. I ever would have thought it would have looked, but it's a golfer's car. You know how golfers are about cars; they're fantastic.
they're great about their compost.
Yeah. So we got how many cars did we sell last week?
I don't know what's going on, but I was talking to one guy who came up from like Portland, and I was like, is there nothing cheaper between here and Portland? I'm like, I don't mean to shoot myself in the foot. He's like, not really. I'm like, I'm not asking enough money.
I guess not.
I gotta raise the prices.
It's been one of those. I feel comfortable when we have about 12, 14 cars out front for sale. Because
how comfortable do you feel right now?
Yeah. What do we got out there? Six? Five? Six?
Yeah, I was about to say six.
Yeah. We're half of where we should be. We're only at 50%. Boy.
Well, we keep putting them out. And we put out a couple of Prius Vs. One sold less than 12 hours after we put it, or 24 hours after we put it out, and then the next one sold. It was only out for about 48 hours.
Yeah.
So, I do still have some nice cars, but just it's weird how quickly things are turning over all of a sudden.
Well, here's the thing. Now,
I'm not complaining. I like to be busy.
I'm not either. But here's the thing: it's the holiday season for Halloween, and we have got. Everything is pumpkin, right? Pumpkin spice, pumpkin coffee, pumpkin muffins.
I hate it
too. Ugh. But We have a pumpkin car.
I hate that too.
Pete does not like this. I bought it. It is a, it's called, the color's called Habanero. We've been calling it the Tangerine Dream. It's orange. It's an orange Prius C.
You bought an orange car.
I bought an orange car.
I'm not judging you if you like orange. If you like orange cars as a, as an end user, that's your business. That's your prerogative. We all got our own taste. It's just as a person selling a car, I know not everybody wants an orange car, which makes my job more difficult right out of the gate.
Oh yeah, where's your cross, Pete? Jeepers!
Everybody wants a silver car. Everybody wants a white car. Not everybody wants an orange car.
There's going to be somebody who's going to grab that car right up.
Somebody will want it. Yeah, somebody will want it.
It's a nice, nice orange car.
I'm just going to get some rattle cans and touch it up a little bit. I'm going to undercoat the car.
No, don't do that, please. but that one is out, and it looks good. I like it. It's just
it's not out like for sale.
It's not. I thought it was.
No, it's not even here, Dad.
Oh, the silver one is out.
Yeah, the silver. Okay. Oh, yeah, the silver Prius C is out. The orange Prius C is at the shop getting its once over.
Okay, all right. So that'll be next week. If you want your Halloween car, I mean, you could put your skulls on it, and any other seasonal decorations you want. You could put a pumpkin stem on the roof.
All right, I'll handle the sales pitches. Thank you.
Okay. All right.
Pumpkin stem on the roof.
Well, I think it works.
Jeepers.
But I like it. It's just a distinctive car. And the color, I'm not crazy about the 70s avocado and all those weird colors they had in the 70s. This one, for some reason, when I first saw it, I probably didn't think much of it, but it just kind of grew on me. So I like it.
The one Volkswagen we had many moons ago was that color too.
We could tell this story now. Was that orange or red?
That was orange.
That was orange.
Okay, so we sold a car and it had a problem out of the gate and it was under warranty. So we said, bring it back. We'll put you in a loaner. We'll take care of it. That happens. Sometimes there's little things that just crop up. So we had the car for a couple of days. She has the loaner. She calls us
She's in the orange VW Beetle.
It was a Volkswagen Bug. So because it wasn't selling, so we're like, well, we'll use that as the loaner because nobody wants it. So maybe somebody will see it and be like, what's that car? You know, so she called. We have a voicemail Monday morning. It says, I got a flat tire. Your car's on the side of, your car's on the side of Route 3. I'm sorry. Okay, so we load up. And we go to get the car, and we get there, and there's no wheel on the car anymore. Like, and I'm not exaggerating. I'm not saying there's no tire on the car. I'm saying the tire's gone. The tire is wire. There's nothing left of the tire but wire, mesh. And then the wheel, the rim that the tire goes on, is gone. It's just down to the – it's right down to the hub.
Yeah, the hub.
It's still bolted on. It's just every piece of it is gone or in the fender. Or apparently she just kept driving.
Yeah.
After she got a flat, I can only imagine what that looked like.
Oh, the sparks had to be flying because it was at nighttime.
Oh yeah.
And we're on the.
We were able to get it back. It was like $2,000 worth of damage to the vehicle.
It was in a breakdown lane, blocking somebody's driveway, on a hill, and
that was fun getting that jacked up to get the spare.
Yeah,
on.
We got it jacked up, got the spare on it, and I was able to drive it back. But it needed a lot of love after that. And we did sell the car. I mean, it was repairable. But, in fairness, I guess, it was a young woman.
Well, the deal was it was the middle of the night. And I mean the middle of the night. She had gotten out of work and she didn't have a phone with her. So she was, fingers crossed, hoping a prayer, trying to get to where she was going. Yeah. So, and she was apologetic, too. She actually
ponied up about a little bit of money. Which is a young woman. She kind of freaked out. It wasn't the end of the world. Nobody got hurt. That was all good, and we were able to repair it. And we did sell it. It still needed some cosmetic work, but it was a functional car,
and had brand new struts.
Yeah, it did. I told her. I said, look, you should really have AAA. God forbid it happens. You're a young woman alone. You can call AAA. They'll come rescue you anytime so you don't have this problem. Because it was, you know, it was scary for her. And it was kind of hairy for it was.
It was interesting. Up from the back, we had the jacket up from the back wheel, and then block it, and then move the jacket.
Yeah, we couldn't. The car was
to get to the front.
Yeah,
it was on the ground.
The rim was right on the ground, so we had to work our way up the side.
There was no rim. It was the hub.
Yeah, the hub was on the ground. It was. It was. You know, it's a story. Hey, look at the time we just ate up. We got to take a break now.
We'll try to come up with some more stories.
Okay. All right. It's hot and cold. Stay with us. We'll be right back.
She ain't heard it while he was walking out the door. It's goodbye, baby. Honey, your time has come. Turn the tables now, you the one on the bum. It's la la la, singing la la la. I'm so happy I'm singing la la la.
All right, we're back. 9:37, hot and cold Saturday morning. Pete's over there on line three. Good morning again, Pete.
Good morning, sir.
Did you see the pictures Maria sent of the washer?
No, I did not see the pictures that Maria sent of the washer.
Oh, okay. Maria has...
That sounds like really exciting, and I'm sorry I missed it.
You should be. I asked her to send me... I swung by her house last night after work, and we disassembled the dryer. You know, it was the stackable unit like you used to have years ago.
Yeah.
So we had that apart in about 10 minutes. And I
That's
left
the heavy part.
Yeah. And she's got, I left the enclosure in place. You know, it was just sheet metal. She's got all that apart. She's down to taking the drum out of the washer. I mean, it's absolutely amazing. I'm going to run up there, I think, today if she's around, and we'll get the whole thing out of the house.
Yeah.
Big news, Pete. That's big news. You should be excited.
That's incredible. Hey, can I get, like, super political and criticize one of the candidates or no?
I guess so. You have
It's arbitrary. It's completely arbitrary. Here's the thing, and I'm sure he's a nice guy, but I remember when I was a kid and Angus King was old. Now I'm old, so that would make him...
Older.
Really old. Like... Isn't he? Shouldn't he? I feel like he's just a little bit. Just relax. Go do something relaxing. Make banjos.
No, I'm doing that. He can't make banjos.
Young
men. That's my old guy gig.
I'll do it. Or you know, if he wants to make me his lieutenant of something, then I'll change my tune. But it's just I'm like he comes up on a commercial. I'm like, wait, what? Was he like 85?
Okay.
I remember him when I was a kid, and he was old. Now I'm old, so you know I'm doing the math here.
Okay. I met him. We had him on a video we did for Remain State Housing years ago. At the we were at the Blaine House, videotaped him. He's a nice guy.
Maybe if I got invited to the Blaine house once in a while, I would change my tune.
Well, he's not there anymore. He's in that RV driving around.
Well, if he can get me to the Blaine house, then maybe he could come by and we could have, you know, some grilled cheese and hot dogs, you know?
That would work, huh?
Somebody asked me, somebody texted me and said, how are you going to put the fire out? And my first thought was water. But I'll tell you how I'm going to do it. I'm going to send Brian over there.
Okay.
Because
yeah,
when our building was on fire,
yeah,
we had four departments here, 30 firefighters, you know, crazy. The building's on fire.
Yeah.
I turn around, my mechanic's standing there in full turnout gear.
Oh, yes, yes.
And then he cuts a hole in the wall, and then he puts the fire out.
Yeah, he asked permission.
It was a joint effort. You know, everybody was working together.
Yeah.
But here's all I know is the building was on fire. The building was not on fire.
Yeah.
I'm just going to send Brian up there.
Okay.
Let him do it.
He might. So somebody, I have the message here. Somebody asked that too. So.
About Brian.
Yeah. Yeah. Somebody sent him.
Send Brian up.
Yeah. I got a message here. P for governor. No more old people.
No. There's still old people. They're still great to like hear about war and stuff, but like, you know, let me handle.
I got stories.
All right, I got the taxes in mind. I got the health care figured out. We're gonna find people that need to be fined. I'm gonna fire a bunch of people.
Okay. All right.
I'm gonna make the guy that runs my post office down here the Postmaster General of the state.
Okay.
I like him.
All right. I have not met him. I guess I have to go in and. Usually you take the mail, so I don't get that opportunity. I'll have to check them out. All right. Well, I guess that's all we got. I've been thinking I need to do. Remember when we were cutting foam with the table saw, and I got a dust collection thing. The big bags that inflated. Those didn't work worth a darn. Yeah, that was so much fun.
Yeah.
I'm thinking I need to have some kind of dust collection thing set up in my basement if I'm actually doing woodworking.
Well, that's probably what it's for. I got to put you on hold for 1 second.
All right. Huh? Wonder where he went. So I've been mulling that one over as I'm moving, rearranging all my equipment in the basement, what would be the most convenient place? My sense is just to have a fan and blow it outside. I remember years ago seeing that at mills of various shapes and sizes, they just blew it outside. The difference is I don't generate much dust because I don't do that much woodwork. You know, if you're a sawmill and you're shooting sawdust out, you're gonna have a big pile of it. I just have a little bit of sawdust from when I'm sanding normally, and that's
right, I'm back.
Okay, just a minute amount. Was that a customer?
Yeah, just a question. Nothing important.
You got rid of him really fast.
You should have a. I told him you had to handle it. So you should have a dust collection thing if you're doing sanding and woodwork down there.
Yeah. Well, now that everything's clean, you know, I'm walking around and. I don't know. I got to figure that one out. That's a whole episode of something.
Do you have the? Is there still a window in there, or did you took that out?
No, there's one window. There was a big window. You know, it was like 6 feet long.
Yeah, I remember that. Is that still there, or did we?
No,
I took that out,
and I put a standard size window, maybe 32 inches wide, 4 feet tall.
Yeah, just blow all the dust out the window. Put a fan in.
There's a thought, huh? Could do that when. We got a whole bunch of. We got messages.
It'll work a bit. Yeah, I'm sorry.
Somebody sent a message. Not a good idea to be talking politics. Another one. I want Governor Pete on the spot. I want to put Governor Pete on the spot. How's he going to handle the homelessness issue?
I'm going to get rid of all the programs for them. Then they're going to leave.
Okay. Pete for president.
Because here's the thing. If they pee clean, they get housing, but they don't want to pee clean, so they don't get housing. So they stand on medians and ask for money. That's the bottom line.
Okay. That you. All right. This is why we don't talk politics.
Yeah.
Don't ask Pete questions, okay? He'll be fine.
Don't get me going.
I don't even want to.
Remember, a lot of what I say is tongue in cheek. That wasn't, but a lot of it is.
Okay. All right. Okay. All right. Should we talk about cars? That's easier. God.
Yeah.
As somebody who avoids politics like the plague here, you just pulled me right down into the hole with you.
Everybody's awake now, right?
Yeah, yeah. Yeah, somebody just said he's got my vote.
Anyway, let me tell you something about the 2013 Prius D that we got.
Yeah, it's not orange.
we bought it at it's silver. We bought it at 99,995 miles. So it's just over 100,000 miles now.
It broke my heart. I drove that when it went over 100. It broke my heart to do that.
But you don't see them with mileage that low. The C's and the V's people tend to hang on to. So they only generally show up at auction when the miles are a little bit higher.
Yeah.
But that's nice. When parked right next to that, I got a 2016 Prius with that's the newer body style.
Mm.
And I can't for the life of me remember the mileage on it. I think it's like 134,000 miles on it. But then to the left of that, I got a Prius Prime. Now, that Prius Prime's a 2017. That's got higher miles.
212.
You know, on the surface. It's got 212 on it, which seems like a lot. But for a 17, that means it was almost entirely highway miles.
Yeah.
And the Prime is the plug-in. That's the one that gets the crazy mileage. Now, here's the kicker, though. It's got 212,000 miles on it, so it's priced accordingly. And it's the same body style as like a 2021-22.
Yeah.
So you buy this one for less because you know enough to know not to be scared of miles, but everybody thinks you're driving a 22 with like 50,000 miles on it.
Yeah.
Keep up with them Joneses.
That's right. Got another message here. Pete just alienated the senior vote. Who does he think is voting?
I'm just saying that, don't you agree that maybe Angus King shouldn't? I'm just saying he's a little bit old now. I mean, maybe he should be relaxing and let somebody with the energy to get people worked up. I don't know who that can be.
Well, I think Angus still gets people worked up. Forgetting about politics for a minute, I think he still gets people worked up. maybe because of politics.
Whatever position he's running for, I'm just saying maybe throw a vote or two to somebody with a nice denim coat, somebody who's got some good mutton chops coming in. You know, not a young man, but a middle-aged man.
Are you middle-aged?
Somebody who knows. So I am, I'm middle-aged. The average life expectancy is, 76? I'm past middle-aged.
So I only got a couple of years to go then.
You got like 4 years left. So we really, you know, we got to get me in a position of power before while I still have this platform.
Okay. Oh, man. Yeah, this is, we're digging a hole this morning, that's for sure.
And again, I'm going to get elderly people, the health care is a coming.
Well, yeah.
I'm going to have it set up. My state-run hospitals,
mm-hmm.
Presque Isle, Bangor, Lewis and Auburn, Augusta, Portland. It used to be. I was watching Doogie Howser, and in one episode, the lady's paying for her hospital stay when she leaves. Like, she's got her checkbook out. She was there for a week. She's just going to pay before she leaves.
Well, that's...
You used to be able to do that.
Now,
I remember that. When I was a kid, we used to pay before we left.
Okay, let me lay one on you that all the...
Now they're like, we're going to bill you.
All the old people out there in radio land are going to recognize this and go, yeah. When I was a kid, the doctor came to our house to check up on me. Or your mother, I remember. She had scarlet fever. And the doctor came to the house every day to check on her. That ship has sailed.
I don't even fault necessarily the cost of paying the staff. Everybody's paid really, really well. But I don't even fault that because I know that's not where all this money is going.
Mm. I come up with this term.
Assemble it.
Term which other people have come up with. So I won't claim invention, although I thought I did. And it's the medical industrial complex. It's still military industrial complex, but it's also medical. That's our big industry in the United States these days is medicine. And, you know, maybe rightly so, given the fact that the population, all the boomers are aging out and are needing more health care. And to think that
how many times have you had a prescription and you go there and you're in knots as you're waiting to get in line to that counter to find out how much that prescription is going to cost you?
Yeah. Well, fortunately, I seldom need prescription medication, but some of I've had a few people. Oh, I know. Somebody told me this week he was getting a lot of medication. You get a shot maybe once a month or once every couple of months. God, what was it for? I think it was for eczema or something like that. It's $20,000 for a shot.
Yeah, no, we're not doing that.
I think
we're going to do the shot, but I'll buy it in Canada and bring it in.
Yeah, yeah. If you can go to Europe, you can go to even Mexico or Canada, and the medication is a fraction of what it is in this country. There's some major dysfunction going on that it's not right.
I'll deploy the National Guard against the pharmaceutical companies.
Okay. Well, that'll work. I should mention my brother works in the pharmaceutical industry. He's got a lot of money.
Well, not him. He's cool. He's fine, but like other ones.
He's cool. You do have to have...
He's West Coast. It's different. I don't have any jurisdiction.
You have learned people who have to come up with these things when, there's a lot of medications that...
Yeah, and then they get mismanaged after
Some point... Well, a good example I have, I take... a generic Lipitor. I don't know what Lipitor cost when it was just Lipitor, when it was still under patent. But there's a the one that they've talked about in the election cycle here, I've heard, is insulin. Obviously, there was this big thing about insulin prices skyrocketing. And one of the reasons was the insulin was out of patent protection. But the insulin company, or whoever was making this, had patented some little plastic clippy thing on the cap for the insulin and tried to extend that to cover their product, the insulin. And finally and charged, $700, whatever it was, as opposed to $35. And fortunately, that got shot down. But these are the kind of games we're playing, which is very frustrating. I got a message here. Sue the state for rusting out steering lines on my Honda. Don't get me started on that one.
We've got plans for the rust thing. Yeah.
I've got two holes.
Believe me, we've been playing. We ran about this all day.
My wife said when I told her that there were some rust holes in the inner rockers, she says, "Are you prepared to let that car go?" I said, "No. I'm going to fix it. Whether my mechanic fixes it or I fix it, it's going to get done."
What if we transplanted all the 460,000 mile drivetrain into a different?
No, it's got that odometer. It says four. I could just swap that and put it in a new car.
We'll bring that too. We'll bring the whole thing.
No, I'm going to fix it. It's not that. I looked at it last night. It's serviceable. It's not horrible. I went looking for some metal this morning at Home Depot, which is not the place to look for metal. I couldn't find anything of appropriate thickness, but we'll get that sorted out. It's not that big an area, but it's got to be done. It's got to be done right. I'm just going to power wash the hole underneath, knock off the undercoating is starting to show its age, get it all off. I'm going to seal everything with conversion coating, going to go through all the steps as if I'm going to keep the car for another 10 years, which I'm not. I get into 500, it's going bye-bye. So
you do all this and it's going to die at like 495.
Yeah, I've got to smack into a guardrail. I came across, speaking of which, we've got a moment left here. Speaking of 500,000 miles, I came across a video on YouTube of a guy who got a Lexus LS 430 2000, year 2000. Now
one that everybody loves.
The tank car. It is a tank.
Yeah.
It is the most overbuilt car ever made, I think, except for maybe Bentleys, stuff like that. And they last forever. Guy, he's a mechanic. He bought a 600,000-mile 2000 LS 430. And he's got it on the list, and it looks fantastic. The cars are really well undercoated. They just he's probably somewhere where rust isn't an issue, but even if there was rust is an issue, these cars stand up. He said, well, I got to do the repairs. It needs a caliper. He said, that hose looks original. This is a 600,000-mile car. It's got original hose.
Oh, no.
He said, oh, look at this. This is a replacement hose. They used a screw clamp instead of the OEM clamp. So? Yeah, one is better than the other, but who cares? It's not leaking. And so he changed the caliper, and he took it on a trip somewhere. And that's what those cars are all about, which I guess is why we deal with Toyota products.
If you Google, like, what's the best car ever made, I believe it's that model, the mid-90s to that year.
It is.
That car is, like, you'll get, like, the phone book, you know, somebody will be like, Jeep Wrangler, but that car is the one you'll find the most responses for.
Yeah. Yeah,
from mechanics.
We only got a moment left. Having said that, it is a tank, it's a V8, and it gets about 18 miles per gallon if you're lucky. So there's trade-offs here in life. Anyway, speaking of trade-offs, Pete, we're out of time. Thank you for calling in. I guess you raised some blood pressure this morning.
I got everybody awake.
Angus King's not happy with you, that's for sure. See you later.
We're friends. He knows.
Okay. Thanks, Pete. When the sun doesn't shine.